head injury, even though he was wearing a helmet, but it's not thought to be serious. BBC News.
This afternoon's open book brings together the Children's Laureate, Mallory Blackman, and former postholders Jacqueline Wilson and Michael Rosen. They'll be discussing the role, from the joys of inspiring children to read to dealing with politicians. They'll also be explaining how they put their own stamp on the job and its ongoing legacy. That's on its way at 4 o'clock. This is BBC Radio 4. Our classic serial now is Ernest Hemingway's Pulitzer Prize-winning story of an epic and thrilling battle between an old fisherman and a large marlin. Set in Cuba on the Gulf Stream, The Old Man and the Sea is dramatised for radio by Simon Armitage.
He was an old man who fished alone in the Gulf Stream. I remember he had gone 84 days without taking a fish. It made me sad to see the old man come in each day with his skiff empty. In the first 40 days, I had been with him. After that, I always went down to help him carry either the coiled lines or the gaff and the harpoon and the sail that was furled around the mast. The sail was patched with flour sacks and looked like the flag of defeat. He was thin and gaunt with deep wrinkles.
Santiago.
His hands had deep creased scars from handling heavy fish on the cords.
Can I go with you on your boat tomorrow?
You're with the lucky boat now. Stay with them.
Everything about him was old, except his eyes, and they were the same color as the sea and were cheerful and undefeated.
I know you did not leave me because you doubted.
It was Papa who made me leave to go on the other boat. He hasn't much faith. Can I get you a beer? Then we'll take the stuff home.
Why not?
The successful fishermen were already in. They had butchered their marlin out and carried them staggering to the fish house where they waited for the ice truck to carry them to market in Havana. Those who had caught sharks had taken them to the shark factory on the other side of the cove, and it was pleasant and sunny on the terrace.
Can I go out to get sardines for you for tomorrow?
No, go and play baseball. I can still row, and Rogelio will throw the net.
I would like to go, if I can't fish with you. I would like to help in some way.
You bought me a beer. You are already a man, huh?
How old was I when you first took me in a boat?
5, and you nearly were killed when I brought the fish into green and he nearly tore the boat to pieces. Did you remember?
I remember. Tail slapping and banging, and the noise of chew clubbing him, like chopping a tree down, and the sweet blood smell all over me.
Can you really remember that?
I remember everything from when we first went together.
You're my boy, I take you out and gamble, but you are your father's and your mother's, and you are in a lucky boat.
Can I get the sardines? I know where I can get 4 baits, too.
I have mine left from today. I put any salt in the box.
Let me get 4 fresh ones.
1.
2.
All right, 2. But you didn't steal them.
I would, but I bought these.
Thank you. Tomorrow is gonna be a good day with this current.
Where are you going?
Far out. Far out, to come in when the wind shifts. I want to be out before it is light.
I'll try get my skipper to work far out. Then if you hook something truly big, we can come to your aid.
He doesn't like to work too far out.
No, but I will see something that he cannot see, such as a bird working, and get him to come out after a dolphin.
Are his eyes that bad?
He's almost blind.
It is strange. He never went turtling. That's what kills the eyes.
But you went turtling for years off the Mosquito Coast, and your eyes are good.
I am a strange old man.
But are you strong enough now for a truly big fish?
I think so. And there are many tricks.
Let's take this stuff home so I can get the cast net and go after the sardines. Hi. Hey. What do you have to eat?
A pot of yellow rice with fish. Do you want some?
No, I will eat at home. Do you want me to make the fire?
No, I will make it later on. Or I may eat the rice cold.
May I take the cast net?
Of course.
There was no cast net. He had sold it. But we went through this fiction every day. There was no pot of yellow rice and fish either.
Will you sit in the sun in the doorway?
Yes, yes. I have yesterday's paper and I'll read the baseball.
I'll be back when I have the bait. Then you can tell me about the baseball.
The Yankees cannot lose.
I fear the Indians of Cleveland.
Oh, have faith in the Yankees, my son. Think of the great DiMaggio.
I fear both the Tigers of Detroit and the Indians of Cleveland.
Be careful what you fear. Do you think we should buy terminal of the lottery with an 85? Tomorrow is the 85th day.
We can do that.
One sheet. That's $2.50. Who can we borrow that from?
That's easy. I can always borrow $2.50.
I think perhaps I can too, but I try not to borrow. First you borrow, then you beg.
Keep warm, old man. Remember, we are in September.
The month when the great fish come. Anyone can be a fisherman in May.
I'll go now for the sardines. Wake up.
Hey, what have you want there?
Supper.
I'm not very hungry.
Eat. You can't fish and not eat. You won't fish and not eat while I'm alive.
Then live a long time and take care of yourself. So, what are we eating?
Black beans and rice, fried banana and some stew.
Who gave this to you?
Martin, the owner of the terrace.
I must thank him.
I've already done that. You don't need to thank him again.
I'll give him the belly meat of the big fish. Has he done this for us more than once?
I think so, yeah.
I must give him something more than the belly meat, then. He is very thoughtful for us.
He sent two beers, too.
Should we eat?
I've been asking you to. I didn't want to open the container until you are ready.
I'm ready now. I only need the time to wash.
Where did he wash? The village water supply was two streets down the road. I wanted to get water for him and soap and a good towel. Why was I so thoughtless?
Your stew is excellent.
Tell me about the baseball.
In the American League, it is the Yankees, as I said.
They lost today.
That means nothing. The great DiMaggio himself again. He makes all the difference. Oh, but then I think of Dick Sisler and those great drives in the old park.
There's nothing ever like them. He hits the longest ball I've ever seen.
Do you remember when he used to come to the terrace? I wanted to take him fishing, but I was too timid to ask him. Then I asked you to ask him, and you were too timid. I would like to take the great DiMaggio fishing. They say his father was a fisherman. Maybe he was as poor as we are and he would understand.
The great Sisler's father was never poor. And he, the father, was playing in the big leagues when he was my age.
When I was your age, I was before the mast on a square-rigged ship that ran to Africa. And I have seen lions on the beaches in the evening.
I know. You told me.
Should we talk about Africa? Or about baseball?
Baseball, I think. Tell me about the great John J. McGraw.
He used to come to the terrace sometimes too in the older days.
He was a great manager. And the best fisherman is too.
No, I know others better.
Que va? There are many good fishermen and some great ones. But there is only you.
Thank you. You make me very happy.
You ought to go to bed now so that you will be fresh in the morning. I will take the things back to the terrace.
Good night, then. I will wake you in the morning.
You're my alarm clock.
Age is my alarm clock. Why do old men wake so early? Is it to have one longer day?
I don't know. All I know is that young boys sleep late and hard.
I can remember it. Go. I'll waken you in time.
Sleep well, old man.
I dream about Africa again. I am a boy living on the coast. There are long golden beaches, and the white beaches are so white they hurt my eyes. I see high capes and great brown mountains. I hear the surf roar. The native boats come riding through it, and I can smell the tar and oakum of their decks. It is the smell of Africa that the land breeze brings at morning. I no longer dream of storms, or women, or of great occurrences, or of great fish, nor fights, nor contests of strength, nor my wife. I only dream of places now, and of the lions on the beach. They play like young cats in the dusk.
Do you want coffee?
No, we put the gear in the boat and then they get some.
How did you sleep, old man?
Very well, man, Onin. I feel confident today.
So do I. Now I must get your sardines and wine and your fresh bait.
After the coffee, I watched him as he leant forward against the thrust of the blades in the water and began to row out of the harbor in the dark.
Good luck, old man.
Good luck.
There were other boats from other beaches going out to sea. I heard the dip and push of the oars, even though as the moon was below the hills, I could not see them.
Most of the boats are silent except for the dip of the oars. Once they are out of the mouth of the harbor, they spread apart, each one hoping to find fish. I am going far out, leaving the smell of the land behind, rowing into the clean early morning smell of the ocean. As the light breaks, I can see that I am already further out than I hope to be at this hour.
He has the bait out before it is really light. Each hung head down with the shank of the hook inside it tied and sewed solid.
The boy has given me two fresh small tunas which hang on the two deepest lines like plummets. On the others, I have a big blue runner and a yellow jack that has been used before.
Each line, as thick around as a big pencil, is looped on a green sapped stick so that any pull or touch on the bait will make the stick dip. The old man rowed gently to keep the line straight up and down and at their proper depths.
I have no luck anymore. But who knows? Maybe today. Every day is a new day.
The sun was 2 hours higher now, and it did not hurt his eyes so much to look into the east. Just then, he saw a man of war bird with its long black wings circling in the sky ahead of him. He made a quick drop, slanting down on his back-swept wings, and then circled again.
He's got something, that man of war. He's not just looking. He's found fish.
A small tuna rose in the air, turned and dropped head first into the water. Just then the stern line came taut under his foot, and he felt the weight of the small tuna's shivering pull as he held the line firm.
Come on, here you come.
The tuna lay in the stern in the sun, compact and bullet-shaped, his big, unintelligent eyes staring as he thumped his life out against the planking of the boat. The old man hit him on the head for kindness.
Albacore. He'll make a beautiful bait. He'll weigh 10 pounds.
The sun was hot now, and the old man felt it on the back of his neck and felt the sweat trickle down his back as he rowed.
I could just drift and sleep and put a bite of line around my toe to wake me. But today is 85 days, and I should fish the day well.
Just then, watching his lines, he saw one of the projecting green sticks dip sharply.
Yes. Yes.
He shipped his oars without bumping the boat and reached out for the line. He felt no strain nor weight. And then it came again. This time, it was a tentative pull, not solid nor heavy. And he knew exactly what it was. 100 fathoms down, a marlin was eating the sardines that covered the point and the shank of the hook.
Eat them, fish. Eat them, please. Eat them. How fresh they are, you down there, 600 feet in that cold water in the dark.
He felt the light, delicate pulling, and then a harder pull, when a sardine's head must have been more difficult to break from the hook. And then, there was nothing.
He can't have gone. Come on, he's making a turn. Maybe he has been hooked before and he remembers something of it. Make another turn. Just smell them. Aren't they lovely?
And then he felt something hard and unbelievably heavy. It was the weight of the fish, and he let the line slip down, 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 unrolling off the first of the two reserve koi.
He has the bait sideways in his mouth now, and he's moving off with it. Then he will turn and swallow it.
He thought of him, moving away in the darkness with the tuna held crosswise in his mouth. Then the weight increased and he gave more line. It was going straight down.
He's taken it. Now, I let him eat it well.
He let the line slip through his fingers.
Eat it so that the point of the hook goes into your heart and kills you. Come up easy. Let me put the harpoon into you. Now!
He struck hard with both hands, gained a yard of line, and then struck again and again. Nothing happened. The fish just moved away slowly, and the old man could not raise him an inch. His line was strong and made for heavy fish, and he held it against his back until it was so taut that beads of water were jumping from it. The boat began to move slowly off toward the northwest. The fish moved steadily and they traveled slowly on the calm water.
I'm being towed by a fish. And I'm the towing bit. I must hold him all I can. Thank God he's traveling and not going down. He can't do this forever.
But 4 hours later, the fish was still swimming steadily out to sea, towing the skiff, and the old man was still braced solidly with the line across his back.
It was noon when I hooked him, and I have never seen him.
And then he looked behind him and saw that no land was visible.
That makes no difference. I can always come in on the glow from Havana. There are 2 more hours before the sun sets, and maybe he will come up after that. He must have his mouth shut tight on the wire. I wish I could see him only once to know what I have against me.
It was cold after the sun went down, and the old man's sweat dried cold on his back and his arms and his old legs. Once he stood up and urinated over the side of the skiff and looked at the stars and checked his course. The line showed like a phosphorescent streak in the water straight out from his shoulders. They were moving more slowly now.
I wish I had the boy to help me and to see this. No one should be alone in their old age.
During the night, 2 porpoises came around the boat, and he could hear them rolling and blowing. He could tell the difference between the blowing noise the male made and the sighing blow of the female.
They're good. They play and make jokes and
Love one another. They are our brothers like the flying fish. Never have I had such a strong fish, nor one who acted so strangely. He took the bait like a male, and he pulls like a male, and his fight has no panic in it. I wonder if he has any plans, or if he is just as desperate as I am. I wonder how old he is.
He settled himself against the rounded planks of the bow and felt the strength of the great fish through the line he held across his shoulders, moving steadily toward whatever he had chosen.
Now we are joined together and have been since noon, and no one to help either one of us. Fish, I will stay with you until I am dead. He'll stay with me too, I suppose.
And he waited for it to be light. It was cold now, and he pushed against the wood to be warm.
I can do it as long as he can.
And in the first light, the line extended out and down into the water.
He's headed north. I wish he would turn with the current. That would show that he is tiring.
When the sun had risen further, the old man realized that the fish was not tiring. There was only one favorable sign. The slant of the line showed he was swimming at a lesser depth.
Fish, I love and respect you very much, but I will kill you dead before this day ends. Something must have hurt him then.
He felt the line carefully with his right hand and noticed his hand was bleeding.
You are feeling it now, fish. And so God knows am I.
Shifting the weight of the line to his left shoulder and kneeling carefully, he washed his hand in the ocean and held it there, watching the blood trail away and the steady movement of the water against his hand as the boat moved.
He has slowed much.
It was only a line burn that had cut his flesh, but it was in the working part of his hand. He knew he would need his hands before this was over, and he did not like to be cut before it started.
Now, I must eat this small tuna.
He could feel the steady, hard pull of the line, and his left hand was cramped, and he looked at it in disgust.
Cramp then, if you want. Make yourself into a claw.
He ate all of the wedge-shaped strips of fish, wiping his hand on his trousers. He rubbed the cramped hand against his trousers and tried to gentle the fingers. But it would not open.
Maybe it will open when the strong raw tuna is digested.
The clouds were building up now for the trade wind. And he looked ahead and saw a flight of wild ducks etching themselves against the sky over the water, then blurring, then etching again, and he knew no man was ever alone on the sea.
I hate the cramp. It is a treachery of one's own body. If the boy were here, he could rub it for me and loosen it down, down from the forearm.
Then he saw the line slanting slowly upward.
He's coming up. Come on, hand. Please, come on.
The line rose slowly and steadily, and then the surface of the ocean bulged ahead of the boat and the fish came out. He came out unendingly, and the water poured from his sides. He was bright in the sun, and his head and back were dark purple. And in the sun, the stripes on his sides showed wide and a light lavender. His sword was long as a baseball bat and tapered like a rapier. And he rose full length from the water and then re-entered it smoothly like a diver. And the old man saw the great scythe blade of his tail go under and the line commenced to race out.
He's 2 feet longer than any skiff.
The line was going out fast but steadily and the fish was not panicked. The old man was trying with both hands to keep the line just inside of breaking strength.
He is a great fish. and I must convince him. I must never let him learn his strength, nor what he could do if he made his run.
Now, alone, and out of the sight of land, he was fast to the biggest fish he had ever seen, and bigger than he had ever heard of. And his left hand was still as tight as the gripped claws of an eagle.
It must uncramp. It is unworthy of it to be cramped.
The fish had slowed again and was going at his usual pace.
I wonder why he jumped. He jumped almost as though to show me how big he was. I wish I could show him what sort of a man I am. But then he would see the cramped hand. No, unless you think I am more of a man than I am, and I will be so.
He settled against the wood and took his suffering as it came. And the fish swam steadily and the boat moved slowly through the dark water. At noon, the old man's left hand uncramped.
Bad news for you, fish. I am not religious, but I will say 10 Our Fathers and 10 Hail Marys that I should catch this fish. And I promise to make a pilgrimage to the Virgin of Cobre if I catch him. That is a promise.
The sun was hot now, although the breeze was rising gently.
Oh, Christ, I did not know he was so big. I will kill him, though. In all his greatness and his glory, I will show him what a man can do and what a man endures. I told the boy I was a strange old man. Now is when I must prove it. I wonder how much he sees at that depth. His eye is huge. A horse with much less eye can see in the dark. Once I could see quite well in the dark, not in the absolute dark, but almost as a cat sees.
He felt very tired now, and he knew the night would come soon, and he tried to think of other things. He thought of the big leagues, and he knew that the Yankees of New York were playing the Tigers of Detroit.
Oh, this is the second day now that I do not know the result of the Juegos. Oh, but I must have confidence and I must be worthy of the great DiMaggio who does all things perfectly, even with the pain of the bone spur in his heel. Unless sharks come. If sharks come, God pity him and me.
Just as it was falling dark, as they passed a great island of Sargasso weed that heaved and swung in the light sea as though the ocean were making love with something under a yellow blanket, his small line was taken by a dolphin. True gold in the last of the sun and bending and flapping wildly in the air. He pulled the dolphin in with his left hand, stepping on the gained line each time with his bare left foot. Its jaws were working convulsively in quick bites against the hook, and it pounded the bottom of the skiff with its long, flat body and its tail. Then he worked his way slowly back to the bow, while he watched the sun go into the ocean and the slant of the big cord.
He's good for the night, so am I. I'd better keep the fish quiet now and not disturb him too much at sunset. The setting of the sun is a difficult time for all fish. He hasn't eaten since he took the bait, and he is huge and needs much food. I have eaten the whole bonito, and tomorrow I will eat the dolphin. How do you feel, fish?
The stars were bright now, and he saw the dolphin clearly, and he pushed the blade of his knife into his head. The old man skinned one side of him while he held his right foot on the fish's head. Then he turned him over and skinned the other side and cut each side off from the head down to the tail.
Rig now to get some sleep, old man. While the fish is calm and steady.
He lay forward, cramping himself against the line with all of his body, putting all his weight onto his right hand. And he was asleep. He began to dream of the long yellow beach, and he saw the first of the lions come down onto it in the early dark, and then the other lions came, and he rested his chin on the wood of the bows, where the ship lay anchored with the evening offshore breeze, and he waited to see if there would be more lions, and he was happy. He woke, with the jerk of his right fist coming up against his face and the line burning out through his right hand. Just then, the fish jumped, making a great bursting of the ocean and then a heavy fall. Then he jumped again, and the boat was going fast, although the line was still racing out and the old man was raising the strain to breaking point and raising it to breaking point again and again. He had been pulled down, tight onto the bow, and his face was in the cut slice of dolphin, and he could not move.
Oh, and now he has jumped more than a dozen times and filled the sacks along his back with air. And he cannot go down deep to die where I cannot bring him up. He would start circling soon, and then I must work on him. Let the fight come.
The sun was rising for the third time since he had put to sea when the fish started to circle. He began to pull in line steadily and gently.
It is a very big circle, but he is circling. I could not fail myself and die on a fish like this now that I have him coming so beautifully. God help me endure. I'd say 100 Our Fathers and 100 Hail Marys, but I cannot say them now. Consider them said, I'll say them later. I must hold his pain where it is. Mine does not matter, but his pain could drive him mad. I am tired than I have ever been. And now the trade wind is rising. But that will be good to take him in with. I need that badly. You work now, fish. I'll take you at the turn.
It was on the third turn that he saw the fish. He saw him first as a dark shadow that took so long to pass under the boat that he could not believe its length.
No, he can't be that big. I must get him close. I mustn't try for the head. I must get the heart. No, be calm and strong, old man.
He had rigged his harpoon long before. For just a moment, the fish turned a little on his side. He could see the fish's eye. Then he straightened himself and began another circle.
I moved him then.
He felt faint again now, but he held on the great fish all the strain that he could.
Pull hands. Hold up legs. Last for me, head. Last for me. You never went. This time I'll pull him over.
Pulling with all his strength, the fish pulled part way over and then righted himself and swam away.
You are going to have to die anyway. You have to kill me too. That way nothing is accomplished. No. I am not good for many more turns. Never, ever have I seen a greater or more beautiful or calmer or more noble thing than you, brother.
Come on. Come on and kill me. I do not care who kills who. Now you are getting confused in the head. You must keep your head clear. Keep your head clear and know how to suffer like a man or a fish. Clear up, head. Clear up.
He took all his pain and what was left of his strength and his long-gone pride, and he put it against the fish's agony. And the fish came over onto his side and swam gently on his side, his bill almost touching the planking of the skiff, and started to pass the boat. Long, deep, wide, silver, and barred with purple, and interminable in the water. The old man lifted the harpoon as high as he could and drove it down with all his strength. And more strength he had just summoned into the fish's side just behind the great chest fin that rose high in the air to the altitude of the man's chest. He felt the iron go in, and he leaned on it and drove it further and then pushed all his weight after it. Then the fish came alive with his death in him and rose high out of the water, showing all his great length and width and all his power and his beauty. He seemed to hang in the air above the skiff. Then he fell into the water, sending spray over the old man. The shaft of the harpoon was projecting at an angle from the fish's shoulder, and the sea was discoloring with the red of the blood from his heart.
I am a tired old man, but I have killed this fish, which is my brother, and now I must do the slave work. I want to see him and to touch and to feel him. He is my fortune. I think I felt his heart when I pushed on the harpoon shaft the second time. I'll bring him in now, make him fast, and get the noose around his tail and another around his middle to bring him to the skiff. Get to work, old man.
He looked up at the sky and then out to his fish. He looked at the sun carefully.
It is not much more than noon. The trade wind is rising. Oh, come on, fish.
He cut the rope and then went astern to noose the tail. The fish's eye looked as detached as the mirrors in a periscope, or as a saint in a procession.
He's over 1,500 pounds the way he is. Maybe much more. He dresses out at 2/3 so that at 30 cents a pound, I need a pencil. My head is not that clear. But I think the great DiMaggio would be proud of me today.
He made the fish fast to the bow and stern and to the middle thwart. He was so big, it was like lashing a much bigger skiff alongside. Then he stepped the mast, and with the stick that was his gaff and with his boom rigged, the patch sail drew. The boat started to move, and half lying in the stern, he sailed southwest.
Is he bringing me in, or am I bringing him in?
They were sailing together, lashed side by side.
Let him bring me in if it pleases him. I am only better than him through trickery. But he meant me no harm.
They sailed well, and the old man soaked his hands in the salt water and tried to keep his head clear. The old man looked at the fish constantly to make sure it was true. It was an hour before the first shark hit him. He was a very big mako shark, built to swim as fast as the fastest fish, and everything about him was beautiful, except his jaws. All of his 8 rows of teeth were slanted inwards. They were nearly as long as the fingers of the old man, and they had razor-sharp cutting edges on both sides. The old man prepared the harpoon.
It was too good to last.
When the shark hit the fish, the old man saw his mouth open and his strange eyes and the clicking chop of the teeth as he drove forward in the meat just above the tail. The old man could hear the noise of skin and flesh ripping on the big fish when he rammed the harpoon down onto the shark's head. The rope came taut, shivered, and then snapped. The shark lay quietly for a little while on the surface, and the old man watched him. Then he went down very slowly.
He took about 40 pounds. He took my harpoon too and all the rope. Now my fish bleeds again. And there will be others.
He did not like to look at the fish anymore since he had been mutilated. When the fish had been hit, it was as though he himself were hit.
It was too good to last. I wish it had been a dream now, and that I had never hooked the fish and was alone in bed on the newspapers. Now the bad time is coming, and I do not even have the harpoon. Don't think, old man. Sail on this course and take it when it comes.
He knew quite well the pattern of what could happen when he reached the inner part of the current. But there was nothing to be done now.
Yes, there is. I can lash my knife to the butt of one of the oars.
So he did that, with the tiller under his arm and the sheet of the sail under his foot.
Now I am still an old man, but I am not unarmed.
The breeze was fresh now, and he sailed on well, and some of his hope returned.
You were born to be a fisherman, as the fish was born to be a fish. You did not kill the fish only to keep alive and to sell food. You killed him for pride and because you are a fisherman. You loved him when he was alive, and you loved him after. If you love him, it is not a sin to kill him. Or is it more? You think too much, old man.
He leaned over the side and pulled loose a piece of the meat of the fish where the shark had cut him. He chewed it and noted its quality and its good taste. It was firm and juicy like meat, and he knew that it would bring the highest price in the market. But there was no way to keep its scent out of the water. He had sailed for 2 hours, resting in the stern, when he saw the first of the two sharks.
Ay, Galanos.
Shovel-nosed sharks. They were hateful sharks, bad-smelling scavengers as well as killers.
Ay, Galanos. Come on, Galanos.
One turned and went under the skiff, and the old man could feel the skiff shake as he jerked and pulled on the fish. The other shark watched him with his slitted yellow eyes. His half circle of the jaws wide hit the fish where he had already been bitten. The old man drove the knife on the oar into the shark's yellow cat-like eyes. The shark let go of the fish and slid down, swallowing what he had taken as he died. When he saw the other shark, he leaned over the side and punched at him. The blow hurt not only his hands, but his shoulder too. But the shark came up fast with his head out, and the old man hit him squarely in the center of his flat-topped head as his nose came out of the water and lay against the fish. The shark still hung to the fish with his jaws hooked, and the old man stabbed him in his left eye. The shark still hung there.
No!
He drove the blade between the shark's jaws to open them. He twisted the blade as the shark slid loose.
Well, go on, Galano. Slide down in my teeth. Go. Go and see your friend. Or maybe it's your mother.
The old man wiped the blade off his knife and laid down the oar. Then he found the sheet and the sail filled, and he brought the skiff onto her course.
They must have taken a quarter of him, and of the best meat. I wish it were a dream that I had never hooked him. I am sorry about it, Fish. It makes everything wrong. I shouldn't have gone out so far, Fish. Neither for you or for me.
He knew that each of the jerking bumps of the shark had been meat torn away, and that the fish now made a trail for all sharks as wide as a highway through the sea.
What can I think of now, huh? Nothing. Nothing. I must think of nothing. I'll wait for the next ones.
The next shark that came was a single shovel nose. He came like a pig to the trough, if a pig had a mouth so wide that you could put your head in it. But the shark jerked backwards as he rolled, and the knife blade was snapped.
Now they have beaten me. I am too old to club sharks to death, but I will try it as long as I have the oars and the short club and the tiller. I have half of him. Maybe I'll have the luck to bring the forward half in. I should have some luck. No. You violated your luck when you went too far outside. No, don't be silly. You keep awake and steer. You may have much luck yet. I like to buy some, if there's any place they sell it. What could I buy it with? Could I buy it with a lost harpoon? A broken knife? Two bad hands? You might. You tried to buy it with 84 days at sea. He nearly sold it to you, too. I must not think nonsense. Luck is a thing that comes in many forms, and who can recognize her? I would take some, though, in any form, and pay what they asked. I wish I could see the glow from the lights.
The sharks did not hit him again until just before sunset. He clubbed at heads and heard the jaws chop and the shaking of the skiff as they took hold below. He clubbed desperately at what he could only feel and hear, and he felt something seize the club, and it was gone. They were up to the bow now and driving in one after the other and together tearing off pieces of meat that showed glowing below the sea. One came, finally, against the head itself, and he knew it was over. That was the last shark of the pack that came. There was nothing more for them to eat. The old man could hardly breathe now, and he felt a strange taste in his mouth. It was coppery and sweet, and he was afraid of it for a moment. But there was not much of it.
Eat that, Gelanos, and make a dream you've killed a man.
He knew he was beaten, finally, and without remedy. He sailed lightly now, and he had no thoughts nor any feelings of any kind. He was past everything. He sailed the skiff to make his home port as well and as intelligently as he could. In the night, sharks hit the carcass as someone might pick up crumbs from a table. The old man paid no attention to them and did not pay any attention to anything except steering. He only noticed how lightly and well the skiff sailed now there was no great weight beside her.
She's good. She is sound and not harmed in any way except for the tiller, and that is easily replaced.
He could feel he was inside the current now, and he could see the lights of the beach colonies along the shore.
The wind is our friend anyway, sometimes. And the great sea with our friends and our enemies. And bed is my friend, just bed. It is easy when you are beaten. I never knew just how easy it was.
When he sailed into the little harbor, the lights of the terrace were out. There was no one to help him, so he pulled the boat up as far as he could. Then he stepped out and made her fast to a rock. He unstepped the mast and furled the sail and tied it. Then he shouldered the mast and started to climb. It was then he knew the depth of his tiredness. He stopped for a moment and looked back and saw in the reflection from the streetlight the great tail of the fish standing up well behind the skiff's stern. He saw the white, naked line of his backbone and the dark mass of the head with the projecting bill and all the nakedness between. He started to climb. He lay for some time with the mast across his shoulder. He tried to get up, but it was too difficult. Finally, he got the mast up and put it on his shoulder and started up the road. He had to sit down 5 times before he reached his shack. Inside the shack, he leaned the mast against the wall. Then he lay down on the bed, and he slept face down on the newspapers with his arms out straight and the palms of his hands up.
Santiago?
He was asleep when I looked in the door in the morning. I saw his hands and started to cry. I went out very quietly to go bring some coffee. And all the way down the road, I was crying. Many fishermen were around the skiff, looking at what was lashed beside it, and one was in the water, his trousers rolled up, measuring the skeleton with a length of line.
How is he?
Sleeping. Let no one disturb him.
What a fish. He was 18 feet from nose to tail.
I believe it. Coffee, hot and with plenty of milk and sugar in it.
Anything more?
No. Afterwards, I'll see what he can eat.
What's that?
Tiburon, the backbone. Just garbage waiting to go out with the tide.
Oh, I didn't know they had such handsome, beautifully formed tails.
I didn't either.
What a fish it was. There has never been such a fish. Those were 2 fine fish you took yesterday, too, Manolin.
Damn my fish.
You want a drink of any kind?
No.
Tell him how sorry I am.
Thanks. Drink this.
They beat me, Manolin. They truly beat me.
He didn't beat you. Not the fish.
No. It was after us.
Pedrico is looking after the skiff and the gear. What do you want done with the head?
Let Pedrico chop it up, use it in fish traps.
And the spear?
You keep it if you want it.
I want it. Now we must make our plans about the other things.
Did they search for me?
Of course. With Coast Guard and with planes.
But the ocean is very big and the skiff is small and hard to see. I missed you. What did you catch?
One the first day, one the second, and 2 the 3rd.
Very good.
Now we fish together again.
No, I am not lucky. I am not lucky anymore.
The hell with luck. I'll bring the luck with me.
What will your family say?
I do not care. I caught 2 yesterday. But we will fish together now, for I still have much to learn.
Then we must get a good killing lance and always have it on board. My knife broke. I get another knife. I had it sprained ground.
No, I will have everything in order. You get your hands well, old man.
It's all right. I know how to care for them. You know, in the night, I spat something strange. And I felt something in my chest was broken.
Get that well, too. Lie down, old man. And I will bring you a clean shirt and something to eat.
You bring any of the papers of the time I was gone, huh?
You must get well fast, for there is much that I can learn. And you can teach me everything. How much did you suffer?
Plenty.
I'll bring the food and the papers. Rest well, old man. I will bring stuff from the drugstore for your hands.
And don't forget to tell Pedrico the head is his.
No, I will remember. When I get back, we will eat, and then you must tell me what happened.
I will tell you what happened, young man Onin. I will tell you word for word.
When I returned with the food and the papers, he was sleeping again, sleeping on his face. I sat by him, watching him. The old man was dreaming about the lions. Santiago was played by David Schofield, Manolin by Joseph Valderrama, and the younger Manolin by Damson Idris. Ernest Hemingway's The Old Man and the Sea was dramatized by Simon Armitage and directed by Pauline Harris.
And our classic serial next Sunday afternoon at the same time is John Irving's darkly comic and heartbreaking coming-of-age story, The World According to Garp. Coming up next this afternoon, what is the collective noun for children's laureates? There's a trio of them in today's edition of Open Book, when Mallory Blackman, Dame Jacqueline Wilson and Michael Rosen discuss the role of the laureate, the joys of reading and their ongoing legacy. That's in a couple of minutes. And then at 4:30, Mike Greenwood reports from South Korea on how the poetry of the country's national poet, Ko Un, weaves a grand mosaic of Korean history and society. Ko Un, the People's Poet of Korea, is in half an hour here on Radio 4.